Oh, hey, didn't see you there. Welcome to Secondary Fermentation, episode number 89.
We're feeling fine.
Yeah, it was so bad. I feel like that was overused.
That's part of
I'm trying to think of like tangent, cosine, strawberry wine.
Strawberry wine, turpentine.
Yeah.
Isn't that like used for paint cleaner, basically?
Yeah. Clean up some stuff, paint thinner, little this, little that. You
yeah,
know,
you don't want to be in a closed garage with a can of turpentine. You yeah. will get headaches.
Don't inhale. But anyway, yeah, that was weird. This is Joe.
Maybe we have been huffing turpentine.
We're in a garage right now. Send help, please. And of course, I'm joined by Nick.
What's up?
He's over there, chilling.
Sipping on beer.
Sipping on a beer. What is that beer that you are sipping on, sir?
Ooh, we've got a nice little Oktoberfest to kind of keep with the spirit of this time of year.
Spirit Halloween.
Yeah, we have the Spirit Halloween Oktoberfest. They're not just known for costumes and decorations, but this beer is
from abandoned buildings.
What do they just occupy here? It was like an old Harris Teeter.
I think it's like they did.
It's next to the ABC, so it's like
usually
which
like
is attached to an ABC liquor store. So go get your liquor. Buy your Halloween costume.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to move the car.
No, you're all good.
But
you can get Chinese food right around the corner too.
Yeah,
all
and,
set.
And get your nails done. And there's like a wings restaurant
also,
there too.
Yeah, well, it's an eclectic plaza.
It really is. There's no rhyme or reason to it, but
yeah, we're drinking Clawhammer Oktoberfest from Highland Brewing. This is a seasonal release for them. What's the ABV rolling in at here?
A nice even 5%. So, Ooh. Yeah. Good.
Falls
good
right in the range, too.
Definitely on the coppery amber side of the color spectrum and really clear, clean looking. But
was this featured in our NC Oktoberfest / Märzen episode?
Last year. I feel like it was.
I feel like it easily.
I definitely remember having this last year. I just don't remember if it was in the podcast or not. But, you know, they say this is a Bavarian-inspired Märzen and made in Asheville, of course, where Highland Brewing is. And it's smooth and well-rounded with toasty malt character.
I'd say that's a very accurate description. Just a very crushable beer. I think I picked up a sixer of these. And there was only two left, so.
Perfect.
Tells you. How good they are.
Oh, yeah. They go down really smooth. Mm-hmm. Can you guess the ingredients, Joe? There's ingredients listed on the back of this bottle.
Water.
You got it.
Malt.
Okay.
Hops.
And the last one?
Yeast.
Wow. He got them.
Oh, my gosh. What if I was like, grapes?
What's funny is I wonder if they actually would change. Like, I wonder if they just put that on every bottle as kind of a thing they do. Or if they actually will write the ingredients for, say they had like a, I don't know, a pastry stout or something, which
yeah.
I don't think Highland
Krispy Kreme donuts
dabbles in. Krispy Kreme donuts right next to your malt and your yeast.
You know, that's false advertising, though, because there are no claw hammers in this beer.
I don't taste any claws nor hammer.
No. But yeah, just a good all-around solid beer. Should be pretty accessible in North Carolina, surrounding areas.
Yep.
We
just keep on sipping these Märzens.
Scissors. But yeah, so drinking these Märzens. I'm trying to think if I had a Märzen on my recent trip. Went out back to Albany, New York to meet up with some college friends. Had a good time. Had some good beer along with some other drinks, of course. we went, you know, it's nice getting some of that Northeastern beer that you usually can't get.
Yeah.
Down here. And I mean, of course, saturated with New England IPAs. But I also had side pour pills.
Ooh,
I had
nice.
A Maliko pour. If you want to check out what a Maliko pour is, check out our episode on, what is it called? Milk beer or something like that. But
I think it was or poorly poured or Maliko pour.
Something like that. Something really bad. But yeah. If you want to find out what a Maliko pour is, I walked back to the table with it, and everybody's like, did you just get a glass of foam?
Oops, all foam.
And I was like, yep, I did. No, it was this super cool place. It was called Delaware Supply. Very small, probably like the size of the room we're recording in. And for those of you listening, you have no idea how big that is. So just use your imagination. Wow. But yeah, it was kind of a small place. Maybe a little bit bigger, but had like a few tables, chairs, but had a good, nice selection of beer. They also had rosés on tap, which one of my friends just kept getting rosés, you know, like four of them in the course of 45 minutes. And I was just like, dang, bro.
Dang, it's a lot of rosé. Some of those tiny little hole-in-the-wall places end up being some of the most memorable breweries I've been to, though.
Yeah.
Usually they have, like, just unexpectedly good beer.
Well, this wasn't even a brewery. It was just, like, a little tap room. Oh,
I gotcha.
I think the best brewery that we went to on the trip, though, was, it's called Fiden's. Very cool building. It reminded me of the New Anthem Dock Street location, RIP, because it had, like, the domed, it kind of looked like a big barrel on the inside, yeah. But very modern on the inside. They had some good food. They also had a side pour pils. Got that there. So I had the Maliko pour at the Delaware place. I had the side pour pils at the Fiden's place. They only had one sour on tap. It was phenomenal. And then they had, you know, just their list. They had like several lagers, sour. They had a stout. Then they had a section on pale ales, India pale ales, double IPAs, and triple IPAs. And each one of them had like four or five beers. And then I was like, holy cow, you could try so many different ones.
Yeah, it's a huge menu.
Yeah. And in the back too, they had like this area. It was like online orders and to go. And there was just two people manning a table the whole time, like selling like cases of beer to these people.
Jeez.
And we're talking at like 2 p.m. on a Friday. You know, it's not like it's like
going crazy.
Yeah. So very cool spot. If you're ever in Albany, I would recommend going to check out Fiden's.
Cool spot. Sounds like a cool spot. Yeah. I actually just had a beer from y'all. One of the last times you're up in New York from Beer Tree Brewing.
Oh yeah. Beer Tree Brewing. Yeah.
Had a nice little, double IPA just last night, actually. That's in Port Crane. Where's Port Crane in relation to Albany? Is that
Says Port Crane.
That's what it says.
The one I went to was in Binghamton. Okay. It's couple hours.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's a nice little juicy double IPA with I think it was Citra Hop, Nectaron, and Ruwaka.
Okay.
But really solid beer there. I don't know why it took me so long to drink that. Because I had their Beer Tree Pilsner, and that was solid. But New York might be a little bit underrated in the craft beer scene, just from what I've tasted.
I kind of double-checked in a beer, but I had one from Other Half called Forever Ever as well. Had a Fest beer.
Forever, had
a beer from Fiden's that was good. It was a New England IPA called Pigeon Camera. Very interesting, but it was good.
What a name.
What a name. And then I had several other ones. Had some Equilibrium. Didn't check those in, though, so wasn't in on my check-in game.
Sometimes it's hard to check stuff in and on tap when you're, like, with a group or traveling. Because it's just, you know, you have to pause away from what's going on to take your silly little picture.
And they make fun of you. Note. Say, what are you checking your beers, nerd? And then you cry a little bit.
Yeah.
Go to the bathroom. Wipe your tears. Come back.
Deny that you were crying. Say it's dry.
Pee your pants to distract them from the fact that you're crying. You know, things we all do.
And they say, that you didn't pee your pants. You cried on your pants. And it's just wet from all the tears.
You said see right through you. Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking because by the time this episode releasing, I will actually be in Germany for Oktoberfest.
Peeing your pants.
And I probably won't be able to check in beers that easily. I'll have phone access, but I feel like I'm not going to really want to just check in all my beers that I'm drinking. I probably also have had a majority of them. Like I've had a Hacker Shore. I've had
how's
a Hofbräu.
Bragging going?
What's that?
I said, how's bragging going?
You know, I've had all the Fest beers. Yeah, but it's just really tough when you're traveling to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
but,
that'll be fun. It'll be awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. I will definitely soak in the Kolsch's in Cologne and the Fest beers in Munich. Mm. But also, we'll have some bonus treats in Belgium. Mm. I believe we're going to Delirium, which would be nice.
Bonus in Belgium. Belgium.
Yeah, we might go to Cantillon. I don't know yet.
Berliner Weisse in Berlin.
Yeah, we gotta go. While we're in Brussels, we gotta try to see if we can get to Cantillon and get their lambics.
Mm, yeah.
I looked it up though, and you can do a tour of the Lambic Museum on site. And it also comes with like a tasting.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you have to buy like a whole bottle.
Oh, damn.
They don't have just like draft pours or like single pours. It's like you buy like a 750ml yeah. bottle.
Yeah, we did the tour. It was cool. Yeah. It's self-guided tour.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
it's pretty cheap too. It's not bad.
No, and it's nice to get a couple pours. I would have loved to buy some and take it back, but I only had a backpack thing. Yeah. It's just kind of like what you're going to be doing. So
I know that's going to be the bummer, but hopefully I can find some small souvenirs or something to bring back.
Souvenir.
But yeah, so.
Well, what's going on in beer news besides our beer travels here?
Yeah, nobody wants to hear about our boring stuff. What they want to hear about is some recent news, more craft beer selling, or I guess intent to sell. Another big name coming up, Anderson Valley Brewing Company, based out of California, recently listed for sale. I believe, according to ProBird.com, it's a tag of $7.9 million that they're listing for.
Cha-ching.
But they have a pretty large production facility. They have a lot of land, also a lot of equipment and things.
Yeah, 47,600 square feet production facility.
Huge.
29 acres, which I think, like, if you think about it from that perspective, it doesn't seem like it's that expensive. Especially in California. I don't know the area. Yeah. But.
Well, and I'm wondering too, because like, let's see, their equipment, they've got, they put out over 100,000 barrels a year. And so they've got a pretty large brew house. It also has an 18-hole disc golf course on site. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
They call it a beer park. So it's got like a 10,000 square foot lounge lawn, an outdoor music stage, and the disc golf course. So definitely seems like a pretty happening joint.
Yeah.
So I guess with all things entailed, plus I guess with like just the brand itself, you probably get to an asking price like that.
Well, yeah, and it's surprising. Like I said, a little less than I thought. At the bottom of this article from Pro Brewer, it says that it's listed by BizQuest, saying that the gross revenue is $4.2 million, and that the real estate itself is worth $5.4 million. So if you look at it that way, you're only spending, what, 2.5 on a production facility and brewing equipment?
Yeah.
Which seems relatively cheap for a 100,000 barrel system.
Yeah. It does seem
relatively cheap. But what do I know? Honestly, I don't know anything.
Yeah, I'm curious what will happen with it when the sale does go through. What players are maybe interested? Hopefully it's somebody that wants to keep it intact and, keep it as a brewery. But they've kind of noted that there's a possibility that, depending on the buyer, they may want to convert it into some other kind of venue or event space.
Mm-hmm.
Which, California is known for wine, so it definitely could be like a winery. Yeah, it could just be like a large event space. But hopefully they'll try to keep the Anderson Valley Brewing name intact. It's just hard to say, with a sale like that, somebody may just want to kind of gut it and make it into their own image. So
yeah, and actually this is like the third time it's been sold. So the founder sold it to HMB Holdings in 2010, and then they sold it in 2019 to Kevin McGee, who teamed up with his father to buy it. So they're selling it now. So interesting. It's already exchanged hands a couple times.
It's only been 5 years since the last sale too. It's kind of a lot of stuff behind the scenes I didn't know about in the last, decade or so.
Yeah.
But one thing of note of Anderson Valley that I didn't know until I read about the sale was they're a pretty large player in solar energy, and they actually have reportedly been the first U.S.-based solar-powered brewery.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty big claim to fame, especially since we know a lot of local places here that use solar power or other sources of energy. And, I didn't realize that had kind of expanded to a brewery the size and scope of Anderson Valley, who's Actually, the place opened in 1987. I don't know if we said that. So they've been around for, you know, decades now, and, you know, they probably had a head start on the opportunity of solar power, but nonetheless, they, you know, became fully solar powered, which is a pretty big accomplishment, especially for a brewery that produces that much beer per year.
Yeah.
I think it's seems a little more reasonable on a smaller scale, but to have, you know, all of your energy sourced from solar power is...
Well, this article says it's 50% of the energy cost.
Oh, it's 50%. Okay.
It's about 125 kilowatt hour solar array that offsets about 50% of the power needs
for the
brewery.
That probably seems more reasonable, doesn't it?
Which it could be a lot of the electricity needs, because there's some other energy required in the brew house.
But yeah, 125 kilowatt solar array. I don't know enough about energy to know how much that is, but it seems like a lot.
Yeah, pretty decent size. So, you know, we saw that. It kind of sparked our interest into thinking about breweries that have means of alternative energy for beer production. And it turns out there's quite a few. There's a lot of information kind of out there in regards to like beer production and costs, with some articles saying that, you know, a 10,000 barrel brewery paying anywhere between $41,000 to $55,000 per year in energy costs. And just for reference, a brewery of about 10,000 barrels is going to consist of, you know, over half of the breweries in the U.S. Microbreweries are listed as 15,000 barrels or less per year, and a majority of the breweries that are out there fall in that category. Regional breweries being 15,000 to 6 million barrels. So a big range there.
Yeah, that range is a little bit more wide.
When you add all that up, that makes industry energy costs, you know, in the hundreds of millions per year. So quite a bit going on there. And just a couple other stats, you know, like where is the energy coming from for these breweries? Well, obviously, the brewing process itself is pretty energy intensive. One of the biggest steps you got to do is boil water, and a lot of it in boil wort. And as you know, boiling water takes quite a bit of energy. So this accounts for almost a third of brewery costs, according to this Precision Fermentation blog page. But the EPA actually reports that refrigeration, packaging, compressed air that all run on electricity draw quite a bit more than just the boiling process itself, that's usually powered by natural gas or other gas and fire burning processes. So they actually recommend breweries try to target electricity usage before they actually do natural gas, which is interesting. I didn't think about that, but you know, you hear a lot about solar powered breweries, and you know, all of those breweries are solar, and sometimes they do thermal heating, like solar heating systems. But a lot of it is focused on electricity, and it kind of makes sense to me now.
Yeah. You know, a couple we'll talk about too, with like wind power too is another source, but yeah, it definitely seems like an emphasis on energy over, you know, other types of, like alternative sources and,
so yeah,
initiatives.
Another thing, so I got from the EPA website, so this is old, right? So this data was from 2010, and at that time they said there's about 2,500 breweries and brew pubs in the U.S. That number's now 9,000. So multiply that by a heck of a lot. But they said the U.S. beverage industry in 2010 consumed about 70 trillion BTUs of energy, with about 32 trillion BTUs coming from process uses. So heat, refrigeration, and mechanical drives, 25 trillion in boiler fuels, and then 11 trillion in non-process use. So like HVAC, lighting, on-site transportation. So that was when there was 2,500.
Yeah.
So imagine, extrapolate that a little bit. Basically like triple, quadruple that almost. And you've got a ton of electricity usage. And boiler fuel, other means as well.
Yeah, and I think, again, when we talk about, like, energy sources and, you know, kind of where things are today, it's not like a new initiative by any means, but there are definitely fewer breweries that are taking advantage or seeking out opportunities to, you know, either invest in alternative sources of energy, but there are ways they can do that and ways they can get certified for that. And when we first started thinking about this topic or this idea, like the first place that came to mind for me anyway was Mother Earth Brewing, which is right near us in Kinston, North Carolina. Because I remember the first time I went there and they, during the tour, mentioned, you know, them being a LEED gold certified brewery. And they were the first, I believe, in the United States, at least in North Carolina, to get that gold rating. But yeah, so, and according to the energync.org website, they were the first production brewery in the U.S. to achieve a LEED gold rating. So what LEED is actually, it's an initiative that's operated by the USGBC. That's the U.S. Green Building Council. So they're a nonprofit organization that, you know, they kind of have a commitment to finding sustainable futures for businesses and buildings to operate under kind of a greener emphasis and finding ways to use alternative energy sources. So to get LEED certified, you kind of have to go through a review process by the Green Business Certification Incorporation. So they have tiers that you can kind of get ranked on, and there's credits and prereqs that you have to go by in order to get your score. And so gold is actually not even the top score you can get. You can get platinum, which is 80 plus points on the certification scale, which I know that Sierra Nevada Brewing Company here is a platinum LEED certified brewery. Of course, Mother Earth is gold, but the tiers are platinum, gold, silver, and then certified is between 40 and 49 at the very baseline there. But they basically have to show, you know, ways that they can address their carbon emissions, energy, you know, sustainable energy sources or alternative sources, how they source their water, how they process waste, transportation, the materials they use, health, and then indoor environmental quality are all sort of the prereqs and credits that they get judged and evaluated on to get their LEED score. And so if they're 80 plus points, they get that platinum coveted certification. 60 to 79 points on that review gives them a gold rating. 50 to 59 is silver, and then 40 to 49 is the certified level. But yeah, so USGBC is the kind of the backing organization for the LEED certification program.
Did we say what LEED stands for, though?
Oh, I did every other acronym except for LEED.
Yeah, so it's LEED, and it's Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design.
Environmental Design.
And with that, let's take a short sponsored break by us cracking in another beer.
We're sponsored by ourselves.
But this beer was purchased. Purchase at Lowe's Food if you want to read more about more about Lowe's Food grocery store beer choices. Check out our episode a few episodes back. We've got a beer from a Wilmington Brewing Company.
Yeah. Sounds interesting. It's a breakfast stout. Blair's Breakfast Stout, brewed with coffee, lactose, and cacao nibs. What a great find here. So it looks like this actually was canned in April of this year.
Got to get a dose of that toast. Beauty.
It's got a bit of a cascade effect, even though it's not a nitro.
Yeah, as he pours it. Heavy collar of foam, but it is kind of cascading down. Very nice to look at. There's super dark tan head, though.
Yeah.
Almost brown.
There's a TikTok that's kind of gotten popular in the last few days. Seen it a few different times, but you know the old trick where you drinking beer out of a bottle and you slam somebody else's bottle and it foams up? There's... couple girls out at a beer garden or something, and the one girl slams her friend's bottle on the table. The girl's like, "It's a stout, you idiot. There's no bubbles in it. It's not going to come out." And she's like, "What? What's a stout?" And then it's like a whole joke in the comments. People are like, "Oh, what? I'm just learning what a stout is," which is so funny because I didn't realize a stout was like a foreign term for a lot of people that don't drink beer.
I know, but why else would it not shoot everywhere?
Well, and the other thing people said, it's actually more of a factor that it's on the table because that absorbs like the blow.
Yeah,
the energy from that tap has to be like suspended in the air.
I was gonna say, if it's nitro, it might not be as vicious of an eruption, but
yeah, like there's still carbonation in stout.
There's still CO2.
I mean, clearly there's still carbonation, and this thing is like,
yeah,
you know,
got a solid inch and a half of foam on top of this beer. Super roasty, chocolatey.
Oh yeah, lots of chocolate on the nose. But kind of like a bittersweet chocolate,
mm-hmm.
or like maybe a dark chocolate, where it's definitely got some bitterness to it.
A little like, you know, that burnt burnt barley.
Are you getting much like coffee?
Not a ton. I think it's just so chocolatey that it's
chocolate. Yeah, it's like roasty, but more like roasted malt than coffee. I'm not mm-hmm. getting that true kind of espresso or coffee bean aroma. Maybe the taste will have that.
A little more in the flavor, but still a lot of heavy chocolate, like burnt cacao nibs. Pretty smooth, solid mouthfeel. This beer is black as night, opaque.
Mm, wow.
Pretty tasty, though. Quite a hefty beer. You could have it for breakfast.
Yeah.
It and only it.
Yeah, it definitely leaves like a chocolate syrup kind of aftertaste there.
Yeah, it's like almost like an unsweetened chocolate syrup. But not like in an unpleasant way. It's not like you just took a bite of Baker's chocolate or something.
Or like the cocoa challenge.
Oh, gosh. Yeah,
trying
you
to
don't
eat
choke.
A scoop of just cocoa.
But yeah, now that we've ended our sponsored break.
Thanks for sponsoring us, Wilmington Brewing Company.
Just kidding, they didn't really sponsor us.
They didn't sponsor
us. They didn't. But if you want to.
I mean, no one's stopping you.
No one's stopping you. But yeah, so the lead system, not a lot of breweries that actually get those ratings. You know, we said Sierra Nevada, the first platinum. Mother Earth, the first gold. I don't know who's the first certified. Show me those stats.
But I definitely think it's impressive that North Carolina has the first in both the gold and platinum certifications,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I kind of wonder at some point if Mother Earth would pursue platinum certification. They've got a really cool website too. If you ever are curious about like what Mother Earth Brewing has done to get to that level, go to MotherEarthBrewing.com and find it on their page. They talk about, you know, why kind of where the name even comes from, and inherently it kind of provokes this idea of Mother Earth and being kind to our planet. And so, all the way back in 2013, they got that gold certification in the LEED program. And they do a lot of, you know, solar energy. And they're also really good about finding ways to kind of less carbon emission and things like that too. Mm-hmm. Their water use is meant to not be wasteful too. So there's like a lot of recyclable things as well. So just definitely a really interesting story for them for being a relatively small brewery that's based in a small historic North Carolina town. But they really took that to heart and right out the gate, and they didn't hesitate with finding ways to be really energy efficient and eco-conscious as well. So,
yeah. In addition to solar panels for electricity, they also have a solar thermal system that helps heat the building. And then they also, if you've not seen them in your ABC or liquor store, they do sell whiskey and gin.
Yeah,
and
good stuff.
Their distillery is actually made using recycled and eco-friendly products. Including the paint, the carpet, their faucets, their sinks. And they also use a solar thermal energy system. So, very cool.
Yeah, tankless water heater also. And they have like eco faucets, eco toilets. I mean, just... and even like I just remember the cistern they have outside to catch rainwater and reuse that to, you know, put it in the gardens and then pump into the toilets and things. And so... just, I mean, naturally occurring things like using that kind of recycling
mm-hmm.
natural
which makes sense.
Resources too.
Like, if you're going to flush it on the toilet, why not just use the rain? Yeah.
So, you know, Mother Earth, that's one good example locally. Another one besides what we've talked about, Sierra Nevada already, but Mad Mole Brewing Company and Outer Banks Brewing Station are both in the southeast area, you know, kind of that Wilmington area.
Yeah, they're in Killdevil Hills, so they're in the northern part. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We've been there before, actually. Years and years ago.
Outer Banks Brew. Oh, I was thinking, yes, definitely.
And it is like, it's like a brew pub.
Outer Dunes, or Dunes. Yeah. Yeah, so Outer Banks Brewing Station in Killdevil Hills, first wind powered brewery. They have a 23-foot wind turbine. So, according to the energync.org website, that saves them about $150, $250 per month on their energy bill. And it offsets about 1.2 tons of air pollutants and 250 tons of greenhouse gases over its lifespan. So not only using it for a renewable source of energy, a cleaner source of energy, but also helps kind of be eco-friendly again, which is kind of, when you can do both things, you might as well.
Yeah.
You don't see as many breweries using the wind power as a solution for energy conservation or kind of sustainable energy.
Well, yeah, and I'm sure there's a lot of things associated with that too. Like, I mean, you have to have wind turbines that are tall enough. You have to have enough wind. But like out on the beach like that, in the Outer Banks,
perfect
wind
spot.
Is always going. And I'm sure not a lot of surrounding buildings, just because it's such a narrow area of land that they probably can slap that up there. And
the Midwest would be perfect for it. I mean, just driving down I-80, you see wind turbines everywhere in the farms.
Yeah.
But I mean, if a brewery wanted to go that route, I wonder if Toppling Goliath and Decorah uses anything like that, because they're out in, you know, Iowa, out in nowhere.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, they also, I think one thing I don't think about a lot is breweries offering like charging stations for EVs. We're kind of getting towards that age where a lot more people are driving EVs, and it's just so nice if you can go somewhere that has a charging port you can hook up to while you're visiting there. One thing I'm curious about though is like how much that costs the brewery to have those ports at their
For them to pay for.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure just because the user's paying most of the energy costs, but
some of them are free, some are like government subsidized.
Yeah.
And like, so we have an EV and charging it isn't that expensive. Basically, to like charge it to full, it's like, if it was like 0 to 100%, I think it would cost us like $3 or $4.
Oh, wow. It's a lot cheaper than I was thinking.
Let me do some math real quick.
Crunch the numbers.
Yeah, no, it was like anywhere from $7 to $9, depending on our.
Oh, still not bad, though. Yeah. I mean, if you think about like a tank of gas,
and
would
that's
be
full. Usually, the chargers that they've got at those stations, you'd only get like, they usually put out like 8 kilowatt hours per hour. And at the fastest, unless they're like a DC one, which you have to pay for. But those ones, I mean, 8 kilowatt hours probably cost them less than a dollar.
Yeah. So, and I mean, it's again, it's a neat thing that you can have on site that will draw in people that maybe are
nerds. You
know, yeah. Let's say, like, I mean, definitely if you're somebody that drives an EV, but if you're someone that's like, hey, I want to support businesses that are kind of progressive in renewable energy, sustainable energy, that kind of thing. Sierra Nevada obviously is a big one for that, just all across the board. One thing that they do that's kind of unique and probably help them get that platinum LEED certification, they use not only solar power, but they have a microturbine fuel by biogas system that uses the on-site wastewater. And then they treat it on there to generate electricity. And so it's kind of like a recycling, too, of their own water waste and using biogases to actually create more electricity in addition to their solar power. So it's a lot of just, like, kind of renewable energy, sustainable energy, and then, like, recycled.
Yeah.
Like, I guess, bioproducts to create energy, too, which that's obviously going to be a lot more overhead cost for a company to do that. But when you have the capital that Sierra Nevada does, you're able to do things like that. But still, I mean, they still don't have to do that. That's, you know, they could have taken probably the cheaper route out and just gone with, you know, regular energy sources for electricity.
Yeah. And there's a bunch. I mean, this energync.org site lists like 24 different distilleries and breweries. in the North Carolina area that has them. So they've got quite a few. They have an interactive map you can check out, like Innovation Brewing, Bucci Brewing, Sierra Nevada, New Belgium, Twin Leaf, Appalachian Mountain, Birdsong, Thirsty Souls, Wise Man, Haw River, Farmhouse Ales, Trophy Brewing, Mad Mole, like we mentioned, Mother Earth, like we mentioned, and Outer Banks Brewing Station, like we mentioned. So quite a few there. Each of them has like a little link you can click on and learn more about them. So some cool stuff. But I think one of the other interesting things that I found when researching this topic is like what breweries can do to save money and reduce energy usage. And, you know, some of it's what we talked, switching to renewable energy sources like solar power or wind power. But another big thing is fixing leaks, you know, leaky systems, just improving the efficiency and doing maintenance on your systems. You know, they said that one of the biggest like energy users that people don't realize are compressed air systems, because they can form leaks relatively easy, and then that can lose about 30% to 40% of the compressed air, and you're just constantly running your air compressors to try to make up for that. Also with coolant leaks, refrigerant leaks, leaks in your refrigeration systems, like leaky seals on the doors causing energy loss. So just lots of little things that end up stealing and increasing, you know, even 10% of a brewery's energy consumption. Pretty substantial amount if it can do that. Other things are like switching to variable speed and variable frequency drives on motors that you use for pumping beer and wort through different capacities, and then packaging lines, making sure that you've got, you know, those variable speed motors to keep things smoother, because, you know, as you, if you know, like you have a pump that's a single speed, it runs at a constant power, kind of runs at a high power all the time, eating up a bunch of amperage. But if you can modulate that frequency, you can actually cut that down quite a bit.
Yeah, and another thing that they can do to kind of reduce their waste and in reducing energy usage is kind of reducing how much water they use, which is a tough thing for a brewery to do when you think about how much water is needed to brew beer, especially if you're, you know, one of the larger ones brewing like 100,000 barrels a year, such as Anderson Valley, or, you know, I don't even know the scale for Sierra Nevada, but I'm sure it's in the millions. So, I mean, when you have that much beer production and as much water is needed to actually produce that and how much is wasted, there are ways they can kind of reduce that water usage and the waste. Some of that's like recycling, you know, the sparge water. They can, you know, do on-site filtration, things like that. There's a high gravity process they can do where the process will brew beer with a higher original extract, which means less water needed for the brewing process. When you said leaks, my first thought was you meant just like water leaks, but I guess
the vegetable.
Yeah, that's good. Why are they using so many leeks in beer?
What is wrong with this brewery? It's
onion-y. Yeah, and then the other thing is just trying to find ways to like recycle water too. I think one thing is like when breweries like, you know, Sierra Nevada can kind of use water to then create more energy. At least it's got kind of a second life or a recycled purpose there. Yeah, and it actually was kind of led me into another article from Alliance to Save Energy, or ASE.org. But in that same article, they have information about Alaskan Beer Company, which I tend to not think about Alaskan breweries too much just because, I mean, they're so far out and we don't really get a lot of Alaskan craft beer here. But Alaskan Brewing Company, which was opened in the 80s, they've been kind of pioneers in a lot of CO2 reclamation and environmental consciousness efforts in the last, you know, couple decades. They actually were the first craft brewery in the U.S. to set up a CO2 reclamation system all the way back in 1998, which that was definitely not a time where I think a lot of people were thinking about things like reducing CO2 emissions. Mm-hmm. You kind of started getting those buzzwords about, you know, like global warming and climate change and things. We remember, you know, Al Gore kind of being a vocal component for that. But, you know, that definitely was not a time where businesses were inclined to make efforts like that. But
Anyway, what do you mean we have to stop dumping toxic sludge into the local rivers and waterways?
Yeah, I mean, CO2, it's like everyone just thought, you know, it's like, oh, this is a naturally occurring gas. You know, what's the harm in it? But, yeah, so this reclamation system that they were using in the 1990s, it actually would capture and purify the CO2 that was released from the brewery. So when they purified it, they're able to then kind of repurpose that. And the kicker here, it says on the website, is that it comes from renewable plant-based grains, not fossil fuels. So another kind of added bonus there is reducing their use of fossil fuels, because as we know, that's going to be a finite resource. So we find ways to not rely on fossil fuels is also a nice kind of clean way to have cleaner energy. They also had a Belgian mass filter press technology adoption in 2008. So they were the first U.S. brewery, again, kind of keeping with the trend of first. They reused their leftover malt grains, and that way it would reduce the water, malt, and hops that they had to use for brewing, which, you know, we tend to not think about malt grains as being reusable after they've been spent. But since they introduced that about 16 years ago, they've saved millions of gallons of water, and they cut down on their fuel and malt consumption. So, yeah, I mean, they're still producing a ton of beer, just not using as much waste. And kind of the biggest thing I think that I hadn't considered with their location in Alaska, they don't have the nearby farmlands that a lot of breweries do. I feel like every brewer you talk to, they say, oh, yeah, we've got a farmer that comes by, you know, once a week, or a couple farmers come by and pick up all the spent grains for their livestock. But they don't have that in Juneau, Alaska. So they actually found a way to use that spent grain and create energy. So they have this boiler. It's the first of its kind. It's fully powered by the leftover grains. And that's allowed them to reduce their oil use by more than 50% since it was introduced in 2011.
That's wild. I feel like that's crazy just to use what you're going to throw away to reduce your oil use by 50%.
And I'm curious just because, like, I guess with, you know, enough of that spent grain, like, it could burn enough to create, you know, a fuel source. But it doesn't seem like a, you know, a type of product that would be able to create a lot of, you know, a lot of steam power, I guess. I don't know how much steam comes off of spent grain. I guess there's a lot of moisture in there, but like,
apparently, maybe as it's composting and decomposing, it starts to heat up.
I wonder from there, they probably could compost like after it's been put through the steam boiler. So,
yeah. So, I mean, overall, pretty cool topic. Something that I wasn't, you know, ever really thinking of. Just kind of popped in our heads and we're like, yeah, let's do it. Let's see what's out there. So if you have a favorite, you know, renewable energy brewery that we didn't talk about, let us know. But now it's time to jump into everyone's favorite segment, unless you had something else to add.
No, I was just thinking, you know, last week we didn't have this segment, so I wonder if people are...
Oh, we didn't have it. Yeah, that's right. It. Everybody unsubscribed.
Yeah, we lost all of our subscribers because we didn't have this segment. One time.
They de-listened. Last time we did have several beers.
I'm removing my listens.
I'm erasing you from my memory.
Blocked and reported.
Yeah, so we got an LC pick of the week. LC POT dubs. All right, LC's pick of the week. Let's give it a crack. What a weak crack that was. I couldn't get my fingernail underneath it.
The gas escaping, the noise of that was kind of interesting too.
That's what she said.
Hopefully you can reach my extended hand. I'm trying not to look.
Getting some interesting aromas floating through the air.
Ooh, it did not take a very close sniff to get the aroma.
Kind of
a little drive-by here.
Yeah.
Really juicy hop.
Slight, kind of bitter smell at least a little bit. Maybe not. It could be a little like tropical. I'm getting almost like a tiny bit of resin too. I don't know.
Yeah, I could see that.
Definitely giving like American IPA vibes.
I feel like it's like juicy clementine or like orange, just like a lot of that kind of bright citrus.
Yeah, like a citrusy, resiny American IPA. The West Coast varietal, you might say.
This will be a shock after that, chocolatey stout.
Nicely bitter. Not too sweet, not too juicy. Yeah, I'm staking my claim on this one. I'm going to say West Coast American IPA.
Oh, wow. I just took a look at it for the first time, and it is clean.
Pretty clear.
It's a nice dull gold color.
White color of foam, about a half inch, 3/4 inch.
Yum. Definitely not aggressively bitter like some West Coast can be, but it definitely has enough bitterness to kind of go along with that citrusy. I'm getting some like now like orange and a little bit of pineapple, but it's like, you know, nothing that's like a really aggressive flavor. On the nose, like my first couple sniffs of that, I was like, okay, there's a lot of citrusy juicy hops here. But yeah, as you kind of work into it and kind of let it open up, it's like got a balance there with some of that kind of like resinous dank hop. Speaking of dank, we've got a dank burrito opening up in Greenville soon.
Oh, yeah.
I think they had a soft opening, but this Friday, which actually by the time you listen to this, it'll have been last Friday. Trying to get ahead of the curve here a little bit. Yeah,
for once.
Hmm.
This is good beer. I like it.
It's really good beer. All right, so you're going West Coast IPA. I feel like that's such a good guess. And I'm inclined to second it, but then I'm also like, do we play the field here a little bit, and do I kind of go off on a slightly different avenue? But I don't think I can. I think I got to go West Coast. I think it's just too good. It's simply too good.
Simply too good. And we are simply too good, because this is a West Coast IPA from none other than Compass Rose Brewery.
Ooh, Compass Rose did fine there.
In Raleigh, North Carolina. You know what? We actually picked this beer up last time we went there.
Mm.
And I forgot we had it, honestly. I mean, we went there a couple months ago. But this beer has really held up well. It is Tidal Break West Coast IPA. If you've never been to Compass Rose, if you're in the Triangle area, I'd say swing by there. It is like one of the most hidden gems, kind of. Like, you look it up on Google, you're kind of like, okay, this random brewery out here in the middle of nowhere. You go there, you feel like you're like, you're like, where am I going right now? But you show up, it's got a great, you know, tap room, really big space. When we went, they had live music. They've got a kitchen cranking out some good food. Just overall, great spot. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it really, I mean, you never know what you're going to get there, too. Like, I remember the last time we went there, we walked in and there was, like, people dancing. There were, I think it must have been around St. Patrick's Day or something, because there was a lot of, like, Irish dancing, and, I mean, the place was packed to the gills. It was just, it was hard. We had to find, like, a tall table to stand at. Like, there was no sitting room anywhere, so it's definitely a happening joint, and it really just, it's off the beaten trail a little bit, so don't let that deter you, because it's a really cool spot.
Yeah, for sure.
But really, yeah, nice IPA here.
Mm-hmm. Well, LC, you weren't able to stump us this time, so there.
We needed that win. We've had a little bit of a dry spell.
We have. We've had a losing streak, but we've ended it today, both of us.
We prevailed.
We did prevail. But yeah, so if you enjoyed this episode, what'd you learn? I forgot that almost. What did you learn today?
If you enjoyed this episode, what'd you learn? Which actually, I mean,
tell us what you learned. Yeah.
Yeah.
To be fair.
But what did we learn? This was one that I definitely learned a lot, just because, you know, I won't pretend to be somebody who's super informed about sustainable energy sources, besides the kind of, you know, main players like solar and wind. But yeah, I think maybe my biggest takeaway today is North Carolina is doing really well on the alternative energy front. You know, we've got a couple breweries that really are pioneers. Not the only ones, but as a state as a whole, I think we're doing pretty well. We've got a lot of breweries that are doing good things, a lot of wineries, a lot of businesses doing the most good for the earth.
Yeah, the earth
and their their energy bills too.
Yeah, exactly, their energy bills. I gotta say, first I gotta shout out my buddy Alex, who said that he listens sometimes just to hear our voices.
Oh, what up, Alex?
He said, I listen every once in a while so I can hear your voice again.
That is the nicest thing I've ever heard.
so creepy. But yeah, if you're listening, that'll test to see if you really are listening. But yeah, what did I learn? I learned that you can apparently use spent grains to heat your stuff. I'm just going to start doing it now. I'm going to find some spent grains and start heating my house with it. Give me that steam power.
This winter, this house is going to be so cold.
Why aren't the grains heating us? You filled your crawl space with spent grains. We have so many bugs.
You've got a stock pot full of spent grains, and you're trying to light it on fire. It's not doing anything. It's
not working. Oh, man. But yeah, so that kind of wraps us up for episode number 89. If you want to interact with us, leave us a nice review on your favorite podcast platform. Hit us up on social. We're on Instagram, Second Air Fermentation, Facebook, East Carolina Beer and Brewing. We've got a good old-fashioned Gmail account, eastcarolinabeer@gmail.com. So reach out, let us know what's up. If you want to send us beer, if you want to sponsor us.
Wilmington Brewing Company.
Just let us know. We'd love to hear from you. Until episode 90. Cheers.
Cheers.